Welcome back to Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance here live from the Kintech studio. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Dunbar Lumber with three stores to serve you in Ladner on Bridge Street or Dunbar Lumber Express out Ladner Center or Arbutus in Vancouver online at dunbarlumber.com. We were talking Canucks team awards, which voting is now open for, by the way, online in the first segment. We were talking a little bit about the unsung player award and had some other submissions into the inbox. One person saying Nils Höglander, not a bad shout there. Certainly. I mean, he's having a fantastic season. Another one says unsung is Soucy, hands down. My only problem, like Carson Soucy, I think is really good, but I just think so much of his candidacy rests on the fact that he was out of the lineup. You know what I mean? For a long stretch, and that like his their record, and now it's scuffled a little bit since he's been back this most recent time, but for so long their record with him in the lineup was way better than their record without him in the lineup. But he's also just missed a very significant chunk of time this season, and I don't know, you can award somebody an award based on what happened when they were out for a long stretch
in Soucy's case.
Yeah,
what about Joshua?
Well, I wouldn't give it to Joshua anyways, but Joshua's missed less time than Soucy.
Right.
Suter missed a little bit of time too, but it's like, it's just, there's a gut feeling of when, especially for like, this isn't MVP of the league or anything, right? This is team award for unsung hero. There's a gut feeling for when somebody has missed either too much time or, you know, missed little enough time to still be considered.
Yeah, fair enough. The Hume Award is an interesting one because, you know, unsung is sort of an interesting, like, JT Miller won it in 2019-20.
Yes. When he was like the team's splashy acquisition in the offseason, part of the top line.
Derek Dorsett won it twice. Yannick Hansen won it three times.
There you go.
You know who, is it weird that Alex Burrows only won it once?
No, that feels about right.
What about Marcus Granlund?
But boy, oh boy.
Oh,
what a roster that is.
This is an unbelievable award, man. Past winners, like since the lockout, winners. Jarkko Ruutu. Let's just remember some guys because it's fun.
Sure.
Jarkko Ruutu, Kevin Bieksa, Alex Burrows, Steve Bernier, Mason Raymond, Yannick Hansen, Chris
Mason
Higgins.
Mason Raymond surprises me, but all right. Yeah.
Chris Higgins. Yannick Hansen again.
Yep.
Eddie Lack, Derek Dorsett, Yannick Hansen again. Marcus Granlund, Derek Dorsett, Antoine Roussel, JT Miller, Tyler Mott, Luke Shen, Dakota Joshua.
So Dakota Joshua won it last year.
2022-23.
Yeah. Wow, there you go. Because there is something to be...
Oh, Yannick!
He's coming for you.
If he re-signs, baby.
There is something to be said for, like, it should be really hard to go back-to-back. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, you've already got the recognition.
You've been sung three times?
I like with Yannick, people just kept forgetting how good he was. They're like, wait, this guy's really, really good. Somebody did text in, the fact that you didn't even mention Soucy makes him the unsung hero. I love this award because these are the kind of logic game. Like, by definition, if you brought him up as unsung hero, they're getting two retro recognition.
I mean, I'm all for Carson Soucy is unsung as a general rule. He did miss a lot of games. And
yes.
I don't want to reward the, like, ridiculous. So we need a segment that I can do once a week about like a semantic stat that bothers me so that it's not something
that
I
just
do
the whole
every show.
Yeah. It's like, do we need a dedicated segment?
So the individual win-loss records thing. Oh boy, that one's bad. That's worse than the trailing after or leading after two win-loss record. That one's bad. The point, but the use of point percentage or not. Hate that one too.
I know. Well, we know.
There's a lot of them.
We definitely
that
know.
Really bother me.
But yeah, that's the thing with Soucy. It's like it's
combined
built on absences.
Plus,
yeah, combined plus minus. No.
You're right. It's built on absences.
It's built on absence.
And I mean, Soucy's played really well, but it's not like people talk about him like he's provided the team with like 17 war. It's like, man, they're unbeatable with Soucy in the lineup. It's like, guys.
By the way, there's a real groundswell for Garland in the inbox.
I like that.
Which I think actually makes sense.
I mean, put it this way. Garland should win it as a career achievement award.
Yes.
You know? Because Garland, Now,
I will say this.
He's plenty sung on this program, though.
He is, but I would say of all the candidates we're talking about, was anybody at any point the subject of more negative commentary than Connor Garland was this year?
No.
Absolutely not. Right?
No. I mean, maybe Besser, but I still think Besser...
But Besser's not a candidate for this.
No, I know. But yeah. Also Besser, like... Because of his, like, flow origins, because he was a bright light in a dark tunnel for this fan base, you know, like, even when he struggled and come under criticism,
mm-hmm.
I still think he's had a sense of, like, among Canucks fans, he's, like, ours.
Yes.
You know, I'm not meaning to say ours like mine. I'm just saying, for Canucks fans, there's that sense. Whereas Garland was, like, fruit of the poisonous tree, the product of a regrettable trade, you know? Don't watch any Dylan Gunther highlights, by the way.
No,
please don't do it. Don't do that to yourself. But yeah, you know, and I think that sort of amplified the criticism that Garland took. Here's where it comes down to for me. The reason that I think we should throw our formal show weight behind Connor Garland for this.
All right.
I think we should pivot.
The Canucks talk endorsement.
The Canucks talk endorsement for
Connor
Unsung
Garland.
Hero.
Yeah.
And I think it should be a career achievement award. Like, he has been beaten for this award by Joshua and by Luke Shen during his tenure here, guys who were plenty sung, by the way, while he was being roundly criticized as being, like, too small, not helpful, you know, part of this disastrous trade, can't compliment skill players, on and on. Garland has played 232 games for the Canucks, 3,005 minutes. Here are the scoring leaders for this team since he joined the club. 5-on-5. Elias Pettersson, 128 points. JT Miller, 121 points.
Mm-hmm.
Connor Garland, 114 points. The next closest forwards at 88, and that's Brock Besser. Could you imagine that the gap between Miller's 5-on-5 production and Garland's is just 7 points? Like, does that even does that make a lick of
and
sense,
what,
given
that,
how we talk
where
about
where was
these guys?
Pettersson? 123?
128.
128. So it's the same gap between Pettersson and Miller as Miller and Garland.
Yeah, which is also unthinkable for totally different reasons.
Yeah. That's wild.
Do you think anyone, if you asked any, like, hardcore Canucks fan to sort that, 1, 2, 3, right? I think the order, they'd know Garland was third.
Yes.
But they wouldn't know how narrow it is.
Yeah, how close it was.
No, I think Garland's been a key driver for this team.
Yes.
I think he's been a game breaker for them in the bottom six. I think his accomplishments over the course of this season are a major reason why this team is punched so far above its weight all season long. And, you know, once again, by the way, this team's scoring leaders this year, 5-on-5. Ready? Number one, who do you think it is?
JT Miller.
It's a tie.
Ooh, between Miller and Pettersson?
Yep.
Amazing.
43 and 43.
Yeah.
Which forward do you think is third?
Connor Garland.
36.
Yep.
So, you know, like, my goodness.
He's been really good. By the way, somebody texted in, what's the actual definition of unsung? I looked it up on Merriam-Webster's, and definition one is not sung, which, thank you, Merriam-Webster. Very, very useful there. Very useful. Number two is not celebrated or praised, as in song or verse. So, like, unlike Achilles, who was very sung, had, like, poems and verses written about him and songs, this would be an unsung hero. So somebody who's not been recognized in song. There you go.
We should have sports sing radio.
Sure.
Or we sing the praises of players.
To disqualify them?
Or at least do it in, like, verse.
If we sing the praises, like, if we come up with a verse or
with
song.
With a Connor Garland song?
No. Of every player except Connor Garland. Then he must win the award.
Definitionally, he will win the award.
My dues count.
So that's how we'll
loophole. We've figured out a loophole to the award here. You love it.
All right, we got to move on.
All right, we do. All right, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. I did want to talk a little bit about Connor Garland's frequent line mate this year, and they've been back together since Dakota Joshua has rejoined the team after injury. You know, they lose to Dallas on Thursday, but I thought that line, it was Bluger, Garland, and Joshua in that game, was clearly the Canucks' best line at 5-on-5.
Which was?
The Bluger, Garland, Joshua line against Dallas.
Oh, no question.
Right, as is, like, has been so often the case this year. I thought it was clearly their best line on Thursday against Dallas. Connor Garland has a magnificent play to set up JT Miller for a goal in that game.
Makes the same play.
Yeah, makes a very similar play yesterday.
I mean, it's a sick play.
Yeah, to set up Dakota Joshua. And that yesterday they were skating with JT Miller at 5-on-5. Dakota Joshua gets power play two, power play time, scores an incredible between the legs goal from the net front. on the power play, gets the game winner late on the feed from Connor Garland. And you can just feel the impact of Dakota Joshua. And, you know, there's so many things that Dakota Joshua does well. And then when you factor in the chemistry he has with Connor Garland and how well they work together and how well they complement each other, right? With Garland's ability to get the puck into the dangerous areas and Dakota Joshua's ability to go there and finish those plays that Connor Garland starts. And, you know, Joshua, I mean, one, from a pure hockey and right now perspective, getting him back, getting him into the lineup and what he brings is going to be huge for this team for the playoffs. But also with Dakota Joshua, you know, a lot of the conversation is about what happens after this season for him as a pending unrestricted free agent. And I, for most of the season, have been on the a bit of the opinion that he's probably going to price himself out of reasonable consideration for the Canucks, given their salary cap situation. But yesterday he was playing in the top six, and I don't think he looked out of place. And I think you've seen some development in his finishing and his skill game and his ability to complement other players that I don't think it's unreasonable to keep trying him in the top six. And that's the real inflection point on the should you keep Dakota Joshua, should you pay what it's going to cost debate. If you think he can be a bona fide top six player for you, then the numbers that are getting thrown around all of a sudden don't look unreasonable. In fact, they look like something you could live with if you think he has that staying power for the next several seasons in your top six. Like, it's such a significant jump from, hey, guy who's clicking really well in the bottom six, to if you think he's someone who can step up your lineup like that and stick there and help you, I think it completely changes the conversation around should they keep him, should they pay what it's going to cost to keep him after this year.
Yeah. You know how I value rarity, right? Like, that to me is what I would value most, which is why, you know, now you can make the argument for 6'7" right-handed defenseman Tyler Myers being incredibly rare, and I'm here for it, I suppose.
Nikita Zadorov as well.
But I think Zadorov's a rarer piece because I think Zadorov wears he wears his size on his sleeve, and he actually makes a defensive impact. Like, Myers' impact's usually more offensive.
Yes.
Counterintuitively, right? Because, you know, like, the things that he's really good at in terms of defending are things like surfing at the blue line, defending the neutral zone. You'll get a lot of plays where Myers is able to, like, pick off a pass or disrupt possession and then can kind of carry it. You can kind of attack against the grain with Myers, like, leading the charge off of turnovers at the blue line. Zadorov takes, like, wild chances. You know, in some ways, it looks like Zadorov should have the bigger offensive impact when you watch the two play. Carries the puck more. But I think his impact, partly because he helps you spend a little bit less time in your own end, tends to be more defensive, tends to be more in terms of limiting chances. I value that more. And, you know, I think he's like a throwback policeman style guy. So for me, you know, Zadorov and then Dakota Joshua, you know, are rarer pieces, right? Joshua's going to have fought four times in each of the last two seasons and scored 10 goals. Pretty hard to find that profile of guy. I also think there's untapped potential. I mean, we've seen him on the penalty kill. He was great on the penalty kill yesterday, by the way. Now they're trying him out at the net front on the power play, and he's scoring through his legs. He's like dunking on Lucas Dostal. You know, is there top six upside there, 5-on-5? Like, I'd say this. I'm not in a rush to see him in that role the way that I am in a rush to see him at the net front on the power play.
Right.
To me, that's where I want to see more Joshua. Top six, maybe. Like, you know, I think they're on to something with a Joshua-Garland partnership, and the longer you can keep that going, especially if it works with other centermen, higher-end centermen, guys like JT Miller, you know, that interests me. Well, you've got Garland at a pretty good cap number for another 2 years. If you can, you know, dovetail
if it's like Dakota Joshua needs to be the size offset for Connor Garland, and they're like a top six package,
And they
together,
know how to play together.
Yeah, that's the thing. And then you stick him. So, because there's always been that, you know, is Connor Garland, is he a tweener top six guy? Does he fit in? And there's the size issue. But if you take them as a package and it ends up, and then you put them with JT Miller, and that's a bona fide top six line, well, then all of a sudden, as you said, Connor Garland's number looks really reasonable, especially with the salary cap going up this year. And again, the numbers that have been out there for Dakota Joshua,
If he's helping you in your top six, if you, and he's not just like a default top
but
six.
But what numbers have been out
so
there?
So what, like 3.5 to 4?
Okay. Yeah, 3.5 to 4. That's a lot of money.
That's a lot of money.
Yep.
But if he's in your top six, is it a lot of money, right? Versus if he's a bottom six guy, then it's like, ah, can you really pay a third line player that much money? That's what I mean. Like, the question of role becomes so significant when you're allocating that money.
I mean, I also think, you know, there's lots of people who would consider Connor Garland to be a third line player, a high end third line player.
Mm-hmm.
I don't, mm-hmm. but that's out there. Certainly that would match his usage all season, frankly.
Mm-hmm.
Right? $5 million. There are people, and this might be include me, who would consider Ilya Mikheyev to be best cast as a high end third line player.
Mm-hmm.
He's at 4.75. And so I do think you have to be careful about not getting backed into or bogged down in the same cap allocation issue that this team's pretty regularly had. You know,
right, like, which is like guy who could play in your top six, but is probably best as a really good bottom six player.
Right. And so, but, you know, replacing guys is hard. Replacing guys with this profile, with this level of rarity, Zadorov types too, like, that's hard. That is not, you know, it's not like there's going to be a wash of guys matching his physical or statistical qualifications once you get to the first week of July. It's going to dry up. And you're in this moment where, with cap growth coming, you know, some of the trade-offs of signing players, of keeping players, of paying to keep your guys are a little bit reduced, sort of short-term, I think. So I do think you can afford some luxury items right now, especially if you're disciplined elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't. You have to be careful to not replicate some of the inefficiencies that this team has, you know, previously backed into, especially when, you know, there are some liabilities, some things, some cap liabilities that will likely begin to impinge on you going forward, whether it's, you know, an older player signed to a big ticket item, whether it's a player like Hronek getting a big raise, or whether it's the OEL buyout cost amplifying over the next couple seasons. You can afford luxury items, but if you're buying a lot of luxury items, it's amazing how quickly you go through those lotto winnings.
You really got to pick and choose what your luxury items are going to be.
You want to keep the guys you like.
Yeah.
You don't want to have an entourage.
But I think if it comes down to Zadorov and his next deal or Joshua on his next deal, I think I'm pretty easily going with Dakota Joshua
over
Nikita Zadorov on his next deal. Just because I think
for me, it's just like those are the two guys, because, you know, I don't think it's about Zadorov. I think Zadorov's likely to be too expensive.
That's the thing.
I think it's going to be Myers, Bluger, Joshua, Hronek, like that sort of the tier of guys.
Mm-hmm.
How would you tier those four? I know we have
in terms
break,
of like
but
who I want to keep,
yeah,
or
would you put
okay,
Joshua
factoring
above
in contract value?
Yeah.
I probably have Joshua 1, to be honest, just because this is a conversation for another time, but Hronik's next deal makes me very nervous. Very, very nervous.
Yeah, me
so
too.
I think I'd probably have Dakota Joshua
number one. I'd go Hronik 1 with a bullet, and you know that I share some of your concerns. Let's get into it in segment 4.
All right, we will do that. Up next, we will chat with Gemma Carson-Smith from the Canadian Press here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.
Hey, it's Vic Nizar. Have your say and join me on The People's Show with big takes and even bigger bets. Weekdays 3 to 4 on Sportsnet 650 or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd and Thomas Strantz here. Canucks Talk brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at DLEAMC.com. We are live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of 5-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Now joining us, covering the Canucks for the Canadian Press, she is our pal Gemma Carson-Smith. Gemma, thank you as always. How are you today?
I'm wonderful. It's sunny out and beautiful and All of the things. How are you guys?
We're great. How was your Easter weekend?
It was good. It was good. I got to watch some hockey yesterday and
yes.
still have an Easter egg hunt and dinner. So, like, I really can't complain about much, can I?
Perfect. Sounds like the perfect Easter weekend.
What's better than a freshly laid chocolate egg?
Right? Exactly. It's probably a little melted, which you don't like, but, you know.
Hey, you'll deal with it, right? It's fine.
Yeah. Moving on.
So
this one's wet.
Lots to get into. Lots to get into from yesterday and looking ahead here. But we've been talking a little bit throughout the show here. Canucks team awards are available for voting now. We've been debating or kicking around the Unsung Hero Award, which is always a tricky one because of the kind of murky definition of it. But especially this year when they've had so many role players playing really, really well throughout the course of the season. Do you have a thought on who should be the unsung player of the year for the Canucks this year?
That's a good question. And it kind of depends on your definition of unsung, doesn't it?
Because yes.
We've talked so much about how...
Our
how
definition
great...
is not sung, by yes. the way. We looked it up.
I looked it up on Merriam-Webster, and definition one is not sung, which is very, very helpful. Very helpful.
Well, I haven't sung about any of these players. So,
exactly. True.
I guess we could say literally anyone. But it's hard because, like you said, there have been so many good role players. I mean, obviously, it's Joshua who sticks out because of his performance yesterday, but you can see what kind of impact he's brought back to the lineup. You can see that what we saw through the first part of the season before he was injured in February wasn't just kind of like a one-off, right? Because he's had that same impact as he's come back in the last two games. And obviously yesterday was, that goal was so pretty. I'm sorry, but it was so pretty.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just that, it's that he has been he's really emerged into a really incredible power forward who's going to get paid this summer. So he would be my vote today. I think if you ask me on other days, I might say Garland, because Garland has... I think the thing about Garland is that it's not just scoring goals, which I think is what often gets so much of the attention, but he's making these pretty incredible plays. And we saw one yesterday on that Joshua goal, but that's the second time this week they've had a no-look spinning backhand mm-hmm. pass that has set up a goal. Like, that's incredible. Like, how do you do that twice in a week? I couldn't do that twice in a lifetime. Probably not even once in a lifetime, truthfully. But to just see the kind of playmaking that he's doing and the way that he has consistently elevated other players on this team, I would say that that's probably an unsung hero-worthy performance.
Well, and I think with Garland, especially when you consider going back to the beginning of the season and in training camp, right, and there was the reports that they'd given his agent permission to find a trade out there and seek another destination. And then, you know, there was a long scoring drought to start the season. And even when he started to really control play alongside Joshua and Pugh Suter and then Joshua and Bluger, it took a while for the goals to start going in. So if you just think of in terms of where the kind of narrative or the common wisdom was on Connor Garland at the beginning of the year, and then how important he's been to this team throughout the season, I think he's got a really strong case for the award.
Well, I might say that the tune around him has changed if we're talking about singing.
Yes, very well, yeah. I think the tune has probably changed more around him than maybe any other player on the team.
Exactly, exactly. But he's been so... roles. And you can see that he's obviously paired up with Joshua, and that's been such an effective duo. But you've seen him slot into so many different roles throughout the lineup that I think it's really, really impressive. And I would highly advocate for giving him an Unsung Hero Award.
In terms of him signing for a lot of money, Gemma, we were having this debate right before we went to break. We listed out Myers, Bluger, Joshua, and Hronek. How would you rank them in terms of priorities for this team to retain beyond this season?
Okay. Myers, Bluger, who and Hronek?
Hronek. Myers, Bluger, yep. Joshua, and Hronek.
Okay. I think you've got to go Hronek first because there's just not a whole lot of players like him in the league. The unfortunate part is that he is going to command a pretty hefty chunk of change. I think Joshua's got to come second because, again, not a lot of players like him in the league. That size is just not something that you find with that skill set. There's a bit of a drought when it comes to real, true power forwards in this league, and he's emerged into one this season. I think that he's going to get paid, and I think if they can make it happen, I think that the Canucks should be the ones to pay him. I think if you can get Myers to take a little bit of a pay cut, he obviously can't continue earning what he is earning here going forward, but we know that he's a guy who likes living in Vancouver. He's enjoyed playing with this team. I think that he might take a bit of, I guess it's not really a hometown discount, but a bit of a discount to stay here. I also don't think that he's going to continue making what he's making now anywhere in the league, and he knows that. So maybe just for that stability, he would take a little bit less. But I would try and sign Myers again if you can get him in a lower number, for sure. And then Bluger would be my fourth on that list. Yes, he's been effective in this lineup, but I think that you can find his talents in some of the other guys, if not coming through the pipeline, then on the open market. So that would be my list: Hronek, Joshua, Myers, Bluger.
So I want to throw some comps at you here for Dakota Joshua and have you answer whether or not you think the price that I'm suggesting or the comp that I'm suggesting would like exceed your risk tolerance or not. You ready for this, Gemma?
I'm ready.
Okay, so I'm gonna adjust them for cap growth too because he's UFA. Nick Paul in Tampa Bay. Okay, went down there in a midseason trade, had 9 points in 23 playoff games for them, and then they signed him to a big deal. The season that he signed off, 16 goals, Joshua's at 15, and 32 points, Joshua's at 28. Nick Paul, however, played 70 games or 80 games that season.
Yeah.
Joshua prorated will have outscored him by a significant number. Nick Paul ended up getting 7 times 3.15, which if we adjust it for inflation, we're looking at 3.4 million times 7 for Joshua.
I think 3.4 million for Joshua is reasonable. Is that crazy? Like,
No, not at all.
I think that I would say that 3.5, yeah, that's probably a pretty good deal for him. I look at the term, obviously, but he's not. We've seen him grow here, right? And I don't think that he's at his peak yet. I think that he plays really well under Tockett's system. I think that he's 27, right? So he's kind of reaching his statistical prime now, but I think he's got a couple more good years in him. Do I want to sign him into an 8-year deal? Absolutely not. But I think that if you can get him at 3.5 for, I don't know how many years, you jump on that. You have to, right? Like he's been so key to this team, and he's difficult to replace.
3.4 times 7. The
term is the issue AAV is not.
But the term is the issue because you're saving on AAV.
Yes, you get the AAV down with that term.
So,
yeah.
Like, exactly. To me, that's kind of like a floor level. Like, he's actually got a better statistical case than Paul.
But I'd rather go, like, 3.75 times 5 than, like, 3.4 times 7.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Totally. Because that contract, like, we don't know what this group's going to look like in 8 years, but I can tell you that Joshua at 35 is not going to be doing the same things that Joshua does at 27. That's just like science.
It's a tough one because honestly, like you look at like Andreas Athanasiou got 4.25 times 2, you know?
Yeah.
Pierre Engvall would be like another close comp. He signed last season, he was coming off 30 points and 17 goals in 76 games. So again, Joshua actually has a better statistical profile and fights, and he got 3 times 7, right? Like if you want to keep this cap hit outside of like the Mason Marchment 4.5, or at least the Nino Niederreiter 4 million, like $4.5 million, if you're saving on term, I think that's what you're looking at. Like I think his market's in that Nick Paul, Pierre Engvall range. It's got to be. It's got to be. Right? Am I off my rocker here, Gemma?
I don't think you're off your rocker. I
hadn't really thought about it until now, and now I'm like pretty convinced
and,
that I'm pretty convinced that
yourself.
I'm pretty convinced that if he comes in at 3-5 or lower, you're going wild on
super long term.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The thing with that is I don't know what he looks like even 4 years from now, right? He looks so good right now. I think he looks good for the next 2 seasons, maybe 3 seasons, 4, 5, 6, 7. I think things start to get dicey. And I'm not saying that he's going to fall apart, but do you want this to be a contract that you then have to buy out later is what I'm saying. We've seen how many buyouts from this club in the last few years. Like, does this really need to be another one that happens 5 years from now?
Another interesting factor here with Joshua is he's such a late bloomer and his early professional development was like disrupted by COVID in a bunch of different ways.
Mm-hmm.
He hasn't played that many games, right? So now, mm-hmm. not that you completely discount the aging factor because of that, but he has a lot fewer miles on the odometer, I think, than a lot of guys who are about to turn 28.
True, but the way he plays,
yes,
is his heart,
sure,
right? And he fights. So, and we've already seen, like, he got a fighting injury this season. He just came back from it. So I think that those two things kind of even out a little
bit. Yeah, that's
fair. I think that he's still, his age is still, I think he could still find room to grow in terms of showcasing what he has in terms of skill. I think we saw that last night. And I saw IMAX piece today about how he said that he's done these things before when he played in the AHL and before, in terms of those skilled plays that we saw. So I think that there might be room for him to grow in that area, but that's not what you're signing him for, right?
Yeah.
You're signing him to be that power forward, not the skilled guy.
No doubt about it. Gemma Carson-Smith, our guest here on Canucks Talk. So, you know, looking at the team in general, I thought one of the interesting quotes from Rick Tocchet yesterday, talking about his team getting back out on the road after this lengthy homestand, was saying that he thought the game had got a little bit stale during the course, mm-hmm. of this homestand. Now, whether that was because they were at home for so long or because of some other factors, do you agree? Did you see that staleness as well in the game that Rick Tocchet spoke about?
For sure. And I think that the place that you have seen it, not as much in yesterday's game, but in these 9 games across the homestand, was the power play. That power play has been like bread that has been sitting out on the counter for like 3 days. Like that nice sourdough loaf that you picked up and then like didn't eat in time, and now it's crusty as all get out. So I think that that's one place that we've seen the staleness of this group, but things have gotten a little bit mechanical. That's the term that Tocchet has used, not just for the power play, but for the group in general. And I think a lot of that comes from being in that same routine for a full month. These are hockey players, and we know how hockey players come to rely on, professional athletes in general, come to rely on their routines. And that means that they expect that they travel once every 4 days, and that they are packing up and you know, all when you disrupt all of those things, you see that disruption in other areas. And I think that we have seen it on the ice.
With where we're at in the season, you know, we spotlighted this a little bit earlier. You know, Cale Makar briefly retook the scoring lead for defensemen. We know what Roman Josi is doing in Nashville. Does Quinn Hughes need another signature performance to remove all doubt about his ability to win the Norris here?
I mean, it wouldn't hurt, but this is a guy who's going to be a 90-point player this season. Like, he's at 82 now. He's going to get to 90 points. That's crazy. And, I mean, obviously, scoring's up around the league, and we have all these offensive defensemen, like, and Cale Makar and Josi are both incredible players, for sure. But as I said last week, it's not just the points with Quinn Hughes. It's his entire performance, the whole 200-foot game, the way that he has become. His defensive performance has improved dramatically over the last 2 seasons, I would say. And I think that all of those things added up make him the candidate of record for the Norris this year. I mean, if he goes off and has another 4.8 or whatever, obviously that's going to help his cause. But I think that he is the guy, whether that happens or not.
Just picking up on the idea of a little bit of staleness as well. One thing we've seen from Rick Tocchet, both at practices and in games, has been a lot of lineup tinkering. And, you know, on the blue line, I think it's been a lot of load management, just keeping people fresh. But at forward, it does seem like maybe there's an element of just trying out different things ahead of the playoffs. But it also seems like he's really searching for those combinations he can trust. Do you think what do you think is behind this pretty persistent tinkering we're seeing from Rick Tocchet right now?
He is searching for offense. I think specifically he's trying to get Petey juiced. He's trying to get Pettersson to produce points, obviously. And he hasn't found the right combination. I mean, I would argue that the combination we saw with Petey, Hoglander, and Garland was excellent. But now he doesn't want to split up Garland and Joshua. So, like, it's a bit of a Rubik's Cube, only there's a whole bunch of answers and none of them are quite right. So he's just trying to find the perfect answers, but we're down to 8 games, right? Like, I would say that the tinkering's there's gotta be a little less tinkering, put the blender back on the shelf, and it's time to get these guys really working in the groups the lines that they're going to be in come playoff time, because playoff time is not far away. And over the next 8 games, you're playing the Golden Knights twice, you're playing the Oilers, you're playing the Jets. Those are all teams that could potentially be playoff matchups, right? So you don't want to be doing a bunch of tinkering there. You want to be collecting points and perfecting your game.
Well, we know Tocchet is a big puzzle guy, so hopefully that extends to Rubik's Cubes as well as he tries to put this lineup together ahead of the playoffs. Gemma, great stuff as always. Thanks for doing this with us.
Thanks, guys. Talk to you soon.
That is Gemma Carston-Smith covering the team for the Canadian Press, weighing in on everything happening with the Canucks right now. And just picking up on that Dakota Joshua conversation, as you said, you're kind of working through the comps in real time there with Gemma. And it is interesting how many players like that end up going on that long term, right? To keep the AAV down
But it's because they're glue guys.
Yeah.
You know, that's what's sort of interesting about it. Like, teams know that they bring an element they need, and they're willing to take the risk long term so that they fit within that puzzle.
Well, and especially when you look at a team like Tampa with Nick Paul, it makes a ton of sense, because Tampa is, as long as they have Kucherov, Hedman, Point, right, Vasilevskiy, they're going for it every year. So they're okay to take that back end risk on the long years on Nick Paul's contract to keep his AAV down in the here and now so they can keep going for the cup. You know, Engvall and the Islanders maybe doesn't make as much sense as so many things with the Islanders do, but yeah.
I think where you have to, like, where this gets tricky, right, is, I mean, simply sorting Dakota Joshua or sorting NHL players based on Joshua's profile, which doesn't even include fighting, right? So simply this: taller than 6'2", over 180 pounds, 15 goals, forward. Okay, so that's not like, I'm not even talking super intense. 23 guys qualify this season.
Yeah.
23. And most of them, by the way, are like Tomáš Hertl, Jamie Benn, Alexander Barkov, Anze Kopitar, Evgeny Malkin, like guys who are obviously of a different caliber, right? The guys who would profile more like Joshua, and by the way, Joshua's played way fewer games than these guys. You know, the only guys under 3 million are Nick Bjugstad and Sean Monahan. And Nick Bjugstad didn't score like that last year, and Sean Monahan was injured all year coming off a $6 million deal. Like, and those guys are, you know, older or have significant injury concerns. Monahan, by the way, only 1 year older than Joshua.
That's mind blowing. That is absolutely wild.
So, you know, I mean, it's tricky. And if you sort of go back a year, you know, it's the exact same thing. And that throws in guys like Athanasiou, who's 4.25 million, right? It throws in guys like, Nino Niederreiter and Pavel Zacha. Well, guess what? Those guys both make $4 million. So, you know, it's a really interesting like segment of the NHL population, but there's just very few guys that profile like this. And when you find them, often like they weren't even doing what Joshua's doing when they got paid, and they're still getting paid 3+ with massive term.
I do think the Nick Paul is just the statistical analysis is like really close. And you look at what Nick Paul had done earlier in his career and all of that. I guess it's a little different. Just the track record of being in the NHL is so short for Dakota Joshua in a way it wasn't with those guys. But again, like, it's not as if you see what he's doing this year and think, oh, this is totally unsustainable. You know what I mean?
No.
Like, this is a flash in the pan.
We've seen, too, like, it's not a contract comparable, but the Tanner Jeannot return speaks to the price.
How valuable these guys are.
That some organizations are going to place on big dude, elite competitor, right? Because that's the key thing here. Dakota Joshua's only fought 8 times in a Canucks uniform in the regular season. You know, it's not like he's a heavyweight the way we would have thought about it 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But whatever you ask him to do, like the work rate consistency, the way he competes, the way he wins battles, stands up for teammates, kind of does it all, can kill penalties. Like there will be teams, and I think the Canucks are one of them, by the way, and for a good reason, that will view this guy as like an elite competitor who also has a bunch of size and attributes that you want. And that guy, like, I don't think I'd really computed how strong his comparables case was, because with inflation on Paul, you know, and that's what I think you got to be looking at. Like, you're talking about mid threes with max term, which means you're talking about 4, 4.5 with term you can live with.
Yeah.
You know, that's where we're at. I think that's the case that he's built for himself, especially because he's done it consecutively in 2 straight years.
Yeah. And I know our guy Sat always loves to talk about total money, right? But you're putting yourself in like a over 20 million total money potentially position, right? Like 7 x 3 is 21. So if you want to get that down to 5, you're 5 years, you're looking at 5 x 4.
Well, and you could really make it nuts if you go out and have a strong run in the playoffs, right? I mean, you're a couple signature hits and moments away from being...
Imagine if he scores that power play goal from Sunday in a big moment in a playoff game. You know what I mean? Then it's like, all bets are off.
If he has that much time and space in the playoffs. No, like, you know, like, I'm not taking anything away from the goal. But if anyone has that much time and space in the playoffs, my goodness.
It's a good point. That was not a playoff defensive performance from the Anaheim Ducks, from your Ducks last night.
I still can't quit them.
I know you can't.
They looked good. Like, they didn't look good, don't get me wrong, but Carlson, McTavish, like, you can see it. You can at least see it in a year or two, especially given that they're going to add Cutter Gauthier for sure next season, plus whatever they're able to haul in from, like, if it's Macklin Celebrini, who I think plays next year, that's a ridiculous amount of talent for one team.
By the way, did you see Friedman's report? Our guy Landon DuPont.
I did.
Exceptional status going to the Dub next year.
Let's go.
Let's go. A year with Landon DuPont and Gavin McKenna in the WHL. My dreams are coming true here. We'll take a break. Final segment of the show coming up. Hopefully, we will hear from Rick Tocchet post-practice for the Vancouver Canucks. That audio should be coming down shortly, so we'll try to turn that around and play that for you. Lots more to come as well. Get your texts in. It is Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.
It's Canucks Central with Dan Riccio and Satyar Shah, your destination for everything Canucks. Exclusive interviews, inside info, and even the postgame show. Listen 4 to 6 p.m. weekdays and on demand through your favorite podcast app.
Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drantz here. We are live from the Kintech studio. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Dunbar Lumber with three stores to serve you in Ladner on Bridge Street or Dunbar Lumber Express at Ladner Center or Arbutus in Vancouver, online at dunbarlumber.com. By the way, somebody earlier in the show texted in, when will we find out if the Canucks start their playoffs on April 20th or April 21st? That was Alan from Mission. I don't know exactly when we will find that. It's usually like the last week of the season.
After the matchups are set.
Usually. Yeah. So the Canucks play that Thursday, the 18th, in Winnipeg. Obviously, they'll be playing at home to start the playoffs, so that would be a quick trip back from Winnipeg to start on April 20th. I think one of their potential opponents, Nashville, doesn't play after like the Tuesday, so they'd be very well rested. So there's a lot that goes into it. Obviously, as you said, the TV people will really, really want to start the playoffs on that Saturday with a Toronto in the early game, Vancouver in the late game doubleheader, but we'll see how it goes there. I think Edmonton has that crazy condensed schedule, so they're more likely to start on the Sunday as well because of that. So I don't know. There's a lot of moving pieces. We'll see as we get closer to the actual start date.
Yeah, I mean, and remember, there's like a push and pull between rights holders to you know, like the Canadian broadcasters obviously want like our parent
the big
company,
Canadian teams,
the
yep.
big, but the big Canadian teams on Saturday night,
mm-hmm.
you know, like
mm-hmm.
like Leafs, who are they likely to face?
Boston or Florida?
Leafs, Boston, Vancouver, whomever. Mm-hmm. That's like
what they want.
This is why we bought the rights, baby.
Yes, exactly. Yeah,
this is what now for TNT. I'm not exactly sure what their Saturday night versus like Sunday preferences are, but they're going to want McDavid versus Vegas.
Mm.
So that would be the reason more than the condensed schedule stuff
to get them on Sunday.
Yeah. Like you would think that the Canadian broadcaster would feel strongly like Toronto, Vancouver, if we can get it. And most importantly, we want Vancouver and Edmonton on different nights. Right? So it feels like one where the interests might align.
And once again, Winnipeg, an afterthought here.
Who? Who?
Planning it all out around the three Canadian playoff teams, right? Oh, wait, yeah, there's one more. Yeah, you guys play whenever.
At least for
Don't
a week.
Don't you guys think that Edmonton would come before Vancouver?
Yes.
Because of the McDavid factor?
Well, generally, yes. But again, the thing that I would imagine Sportsnet execs would care most about is just Vancouver Edmonton on different nights.
Oh, you think?
And I think the thing is Edmonton would have more value south of the border because of Connor McDavid, but I think the population difference between the two, if not outweighs it, at least closes the gap.
So yeah, in my head, I'm thinking
both teams, if they're in the Stanley Cup final, are drawing like an unthinkable proportion of the country watching their run deep into it. Both teams.
Yeah.
But I would think they would want Toronto, Edmonton on the same day and then Vancouver, Winnipeg on the other day.
Well, for sure. They definitely want something like that.
Yeah.
No question.
You run that up the flagpole to Friedman and Merrick.
Oh, listen, we're just, see what they say.
No,
run it up to run it up to the people who can actually make a difference.
This is what I do.
The people that the execs will actually listen to.
Or no.
Your other co. Yeah.
I've heard of before.
How are you contacting me? Who is this? All right. Canucks are out on the road after that lengthy 9-game homestand, but they did practice today at Rogers Arena. And here is Rick Tocchet speaking to the media after that practice.
What can you tell us about Brock and Phil Hronek?
Yeah, Brock was more of a maintenance. You know, he hasn't taken a practice off, and there's nothing really major. Well, I felt that he should get off the ice and just be ready for tomorrow. He wanted to stay in practice, but I think he needed a day off.
Rick, can you bring up the speed? I've been on vacation for a couple of weeks, enjoying the sundown in the desert.
Nice.
Where's Thatcher at? Has he been skating? Where's his timeline?
He's like, whether he's on time or ahead of schedule, he's doing really well right now. And what we're doing with him, it's going to be. He's excited. Thatcher's excited. What's going on?
How many games do you want to get him before you start the play?
Well, I don't know. I can't give an exact date or exact game, but he's going to get some games before the season ends. So that's a positive.
Have you been told when he's going to be able to skate?
Not the exact game, but there's, obviously the latter part of the season.
Is he skating?
He's done a couple of things, but he hasn't been, like, you know, with his pads on. So,
okay. Rick, where do you stand on the whole resting guys before the playoffs? You know, you played through it in your career. Where do you sit on that? And also balancing the fact that I think winning first would mean something to this city, but also to this team, the way that you guys have played this year.
I think all that stuff comes from game to game, and it's situational, so it's hard to explain, say it now. I don't know how many games we got left. Nine?
Eight
games left. So I couldn't give you the exact, but there is some value to certain guys, whether it's down the stretch. Is there a game you can get a guy out to help out on a nag at an injury? Yeah, you got to look at it as a head coach, but I don't look at it right now. I look at it tomorrow, Vegas. That's the way you got to look at it.
Rick, when you look at Archer Seelaws at 23 years old, getting this opportunity to come up, he's done it a little bit before in his career at the NHL level, but how important do you think that is for a 23-year-old who's developing his game?
I think for a goaltender, especially a 23-year-old goaltender, coming in, you know, last year, playing, was it, 4 or 5 games, NHL level, going to the World Championships, playing, you know, I don't care what anybody says, it's still a high-pressure tournament. And then, you know, being the guy down in Abbotsford right from the start of the year, to now getting some games, I think it's huge for his development. And getting to work with Clarkie now, NHL practices. I mean, you got to think his development has just increased over the last, I think, the last 6-7 months.
He was talking about having so much more confidence in himself. I think from a player going from a 22-year-old goalie to a 23-year-old goalie, is that the biggest difference? Do you see in a young player like that?
Well, I saw last night where there was a shot on net. There was kind of a rebound in front. And he was just, like, you can tell Clark, he's worked with him. He's watched Thatcher, you know. Even if you look at Casey's game, how he's changed, he's there. He's not sliding all over the place. He's not flopping. He's there for the second shot. You can tell. That's when you know you got the goalie's listening, or you got a mature goalie where he's there for the second shot. He's not, you know, out of the net. I'm not a goalie guy, but that's when I know when a goalie's on, is he's there.
Where's Lindholm at, and will he go on the trip?
Yeah, he'll be on the trip. He's skating every day, and I don't have exactly the same thing, exact date. You know, we want to get him ready for whatever that game is.
When he's back and paired with Teddy, that is probably one of the dominant pairings on the PK in the league. Why are they so good together?
Well, I think the draws help. Yeah. You know, him with the draws. If he's, you know, if he's a 60%, sometimes it's 75% clip. And we're a good face-off team. It's huge, especially if you know, we just got to work on getting the puck down in our PK. That's probably the weakness of it. But for him, I think with the draws, and he's starting to get used to the system. And then you got Dak in there. Those three guys, especially to me, you can rotate those three. It depends on if somebody's been on the ice or tired. I could put even Dak out there with Lindholm when he comes back, or Teddy and Lindholm. There's the three-way are kind of our top two defenders.
You're having an extended chat with Teddy after practice today, but just instructional? Or?
Yeah, just a couple of instructional things. Yeah. Feedback.
When you were playing, how valuable were your bottom six lines in trying to win it all? Everybody talks about what you need from the top pairings, but we know what happens in the postseason and how top lines are shut down.
Yeah, bottom six, like, if you talk to all the Stanley Cup winners, they always talk, you know, you always got the star players, but it's that, if you look last year, Vegas, that fourth line, I mean, they were a big part of that team winning the Cup. Just over the years, I've always felt that the role players are huge. It's as simple of change momentum of a game. It's wearing down the other team's best player. It's holding pucks in the corner. You know, it's okay to be a role guy. Like, or it's stopping momentum. You know, with a good forecheck, it's a good wall play. I mean, you got to have those type of guys, that attitude in those type of playoff games.
You're of a certain vintage. Do you remember John Drews scoring 14 playoff goals in 15 games coming out of nowhere?
Yes.
Do you have that guy in your team? Maybe it might.
You never know. You never know.
Maybe Dak.
Somebody, you never know. Yeah. Yeah. You never
but
know.
But somebody does, right? Every year.
There's always somebody. Yeah. And you know, as a player, you always want to play. You know, you always want to rise to the occasion, you know, so if you can find those guys, but that's our job as a coach, you know, get instill the confidence in for these guys to rise above their playing, you know.
Rick, what would you like to see these final 8 games in the final 2 weeks? You know, I think goaltending hasn't been a problem for you right now. I thought you played well defensively, but what would you like to have tightened up, maybe to get back to where we saw you, where you guys were really functioning at all?
Well, I think structurally, I think we're fine. You know, like, we're not given a ton. I mean, we do, yeah, every team gives. I mean, you're playing good teams. They're great teams. They're going to get their looks. I don't care who you are. You can play perfect defense. So that part I like. To me, I would like to see a little bit more better puck management, game management. You know, we've been out there for a minute. Somebody has the puck. You can't turn the puck over because now it happened in that last game. You know, all of a sudden we have people on the ice that have been out there for 90 seconds and we don't get the puck deep. Now we have to keep defending. That's the maturity of the next level for this group, is to understand game management. So that's what I'd like to see better. And obviously, you know, some more inside offensive plays, you know, some more rebound goals or you know, yeah, the tic-tac-toes, they're hard to have.
I want to circle back, because when I asked the guys in the room, they've been good all season long, but I asked them about finishing first, because I think it'd be a good character the way that these guys have played. Do you sense that would be something that they would like to have happen?
Listen, you finish first, you know, you hang your hat on something, but I don't really, doesn't really matter to me if you're not playing well. Like, you know, you can hang a banner and not, and then all of a sudden, you know. But put it this way, if you're going to be first, you have to play well down the stretch. So, you know, I don't think we're going to hang a banner if you're not playing well. So that, I guess that's the way you look at it. So we need to play. That's why I look at playing well. Whatever happens with the rewards of it, great. But I look at the initial thing as playing well. How do we get to our playing well?
Can you sense this province excitement level with the fact that you guys have clinched a playoff spot now? It's literally on the horizon for everybody?
Yeah, I think so. I hope so. I mean, it's been a long time here. And as a coach, you can feel the frustration throughout the year of, you know, the fans want it. So hopefully, you know, they can energize or, you know, get the building loud and stuff. I mean, that players love that stuff. Love it. You can feed off it.
In playoff preparation from a coaching standpoint, yeah. You have to go into Vegas tomorrow night, LA yeah. at the end of the week. You still got a trip to Edmonton, Winnipeg. Like, for these guys that haven't really had that playoff experience,
yeah,
like, how much will that help playing in some of these hostile environments over the final eight?
Great question. I'm glad we're playing these games. I mean, I'm not sitting here, you know, I'm not going to disrespect other teams, non-playoff teams. I'd rather play these guys. Me personally, that's the way you're going to build up some of the scar tissue, you know, instead of going into the playoffs. You know, all of a sudden you got to raise your level. So these are good buildings to go in. You know, it's good for some of these guys to see. And in these situational games, you know, like, it's big for us.
Are you resting anybody tomorrow on the back end? Z?
No, Z will be back end. Yeah.
Who's going out there?
We haven't made that decision
okay.
yet. Yeah.
But Z's going back
end. Yeah, okay. Z's in, yeah.
Okay.
That is Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet speaking to the media after the team practiced, and just some of the personnel updates there. So expanding a little bit on the Brock Besser partial absence. Brock started the skate, but then left halfway through, or partway through at least, and Tocchet said a maintenance day, just felt he should get the day off, hasn't taken a practice off for a while. Now, a little curious, because as you mentioned, usually that decision is made before the player gets on the ice at practice, but certainly didn't sound like any concern from Rick Tocchet on the status of Brock Besser. On Elias Lindholm, says he will be on the trip, which echoes what he said yesterday. He's skating and they want to get him ready for that game, which is just, it was kind of a hypothetical. Whenever he's ready, we're just focusing on getting him back for, quote, that game. And then at the end, they're saying that Nikita Zadorov will be back in the lineup as the load management rotation continues on the blue line for the Canucks, with just 8 games remaining now before they start their playoff campaign. So 3-game road trip here, Vegas, Arizona, and LA. And, you know, as I was just mentioning there with Nikita Zadorov, there's been that rotation of guys on the blue line and different pairings as a result of that, although Quinn Hughes and Filip Hronek have mostly still been pretty locked together outside of a game here or there. But up front, there's also been a lot of churn in terms of who's in the lineup, with guys coming back from injury like Dakota Joshua, and in terms of who's playing with who. And on the blue line, it's easy to look at it and say, that's just load management. That's just, you know, maybe trying a few things out here. But up front, and we talked about this with Gemma Carson-Smith earlier in the show, it doesn't feel like, I know there's the one way you could look at it, which is, hey, let's try this combination together so we know if we have to go to it in the playoffs, at least they've played together, at least we've had a look at it. But I think it goes beyond that. I think when I see the way Rick Tocchet is changing these lines up on a regular basis and how much the team is consistently struggling to generate scoring chances against some of the other really good teams, this really feels like a coach who is, I don't want to say desperately looking for answers, but who's looking for answers with his forward group in terms of trios that can consistently go out there and control the puck and play in the offensive zone.
I'm curious. So I actually just generally struggle with this time of year. Okay. And we've been through this now three times, and we've been through it from very, very different angles, mm-hmm. right? Where we had the Boudreau bump year, yep. which was our first season doing this program, and the Canucks late season charge, the market got caught up in it and I didn't really buy it. Then we had the late season charge last year, and I bought the structural improvement and the pace of the defenders that they were putting in, making a significant difference. But I didn't know that it would translate, and I thought the cost was a little bit prohibitive in terms of what the team was leaving on the table by charging hard at the end of the year. Now, I think that aged well for them because they got off to such a hot start this year.
100%.
Right? You'd say it paid off. But, you know, on the very last day of the season, they drop from a place where you could have selected Michkov. Right? Like, Michkov or Leonard? Could you imagine?
Anyway, it'd be nice.
There was a cost, is all I'm saying. But it obviously paid off for the club. Can't dispute that. And then this year, again, we've got this team that's like playing better than they were on the front nine, but getting less impressive results. And, you know, there's a tension, I think. Like, there's a real tension. Like, how much does it matter? And the NHL itself, I always bring it up, but Bill Daly sent a memo with 69 games in the books for most teams. Some teams had 80 games, which is less nice. And
70, nice. Surely, if it was 69.
What did I say?
80. But now that's a big gap.
But he basically said we're 82.5% through the season.
Yeah.
And what comes next is actually less revealing than what's already happened. The NHL said that in an internal memo. Deputy commissioner.
Yeah.
So, and I think they're right, by the way. Like, you know, college season's going to wrap up here, right? Frozen Four is about to take place. Canucks will send Scott Young, as they always do. Although I don't expect them to be big players, by the way, in NCAA free agency.
Sure.
Might land a name.
Yeah.
Anyway. Once that happens, you're going to see, like, some of these teams, like, Arizona's probably going to have a college guy or two. Like, you're going to be playing some teams that have, like, their answers to Akito Hirose.
I think the other thing that happens
remember
at this...
Remember Akito Hirose?
I do. Boy, do I.
We talked a lot about Akito Hirose.
He was the main character of the last month of the season last year.
Oh, man.
He played two games this year at the beginning of the year.
Fun times.
Yeah, great times. But I think the biggest thing that happens...
You were so deprived.
At this time of year... Look, this is a lot better. I'll say that. The biggest thing that happens at this time of the year, and now we're seeing it from the other side versus what we've seen in the first couple of years we were doing this show, is that the stakes are so different for every team, right? Like, not every team is playing for the same thing. Some teams, and it's really dwindled, and it's basically just Eastern Conference teams now that are, like, playing for their playoff lives. Other teams are, you know, veteran teams that have been there before are really just trying to get healthy. There's teams like the Ducks who are really looking ahead to next year. There's teams like the Canucks who are still playing for playoff seeding, but how much does that really matter versus making the playoffs, right?
Yeah.
And, like, the way you get the most competitive, truest games is when the stakes are the same for everyone.
Totally.
Right? When everyone is equally invested and trying to accomplish the same thing in a game. And just at this time of year, there's a lot of, like, different interests and different goals for teams that they're trying to accomplish. And that makes it way harder to judge the games.
Well, and you could see it last night. Like, literally, the Canucks were at 75% push until the Ducks tied it. And then they tried for 15 minutes and they blew them out of the water.
I mean,
the Joshua goal was inevitable. Not inevitable that it would happen that way, but it was inevitable that Vancouver was winning with the way that they dominated play, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So,
but I think it's as much as all that's true.
Is Tocchet struggling with his forward group, or is he himself saving some things?
So
is
it could
he
be
trying
that
to get guys to play together?
I see that. I just think that it hits a little different because the Canucks haven't been here before, right? So there's not that same sense of, like, veteran team just biding their time before they really kick it up a notch when the playoffs get going. And then I think also the commentary from Tocchet himself reveals that there is a level of dissatisfaction beyond just, you know, playing a little bit of possum with what you're doing, right? Like, how many times does he keep emphasizing, we have to raise our game right now? You know, you got to have that will to go to the net. We got to get some guys going. You know, the commentary of like, hey, some guys are going to the dirty areas, not everyone, but some. There does seem to be, to me at least, a legitimate dissatisfaction from the coach with what he's seeing from his forward group. And so not that there's no element of, well, let's see what we have in a few different things. Maybe, as you said, let's, you know, keep some, hold some things back in case we need to surprise teams with them at some point in the postseason. That could all be playing a part here. But I do think the fundamental driver to all the shifting and all the flux has been, the playoffs are 8 games away, and I don't have line combinations that I feel really good about running out in game one right now. Like, I don't, I think that's my read on the situation, at least, is if game one was tomorrow, I can't tell you what the lines would be. I can make a guess, but like, I don't think we know what the best version of this forward group is right now.
Yeah.
And I don't think Rick Tocchet knows.
Yeah. I mean, the goals have been hard to come by, and this team's filtering so much. Like last night, right? 1 5-on-5 goal. Pretty consistent with some of what we've seen in terms of this team performing at kind of a lower ebb over the past month and a half. 46 shot attempts, 23 from defensemen. Half of the shot attempts that the team took 5-on-5 were point shots. You know, and then now there's some that end up as shots credited to forwards because like Besser got to it and deflected it.
Tipped, yep.
But fundamentally, where are the shots coming from there? This team shoots from the perimeter so much, man. I feel like it's rare that we see them get inside lately, or at least we rarely see them get inside for shot attempts, initial shot attempts. We sometimes see them get to rebounds. We see a lot of deflections. They're definitely shooting for deflections. It's not thoughtless.
No, it's a tactical decision, 100%.
It's a tactical thing. Yeah. But like over the past couple months, when those pucks aren't regularly finding the back of the net, you know, it looks certainly it feels like it's part of why this team's margin for error feels like it's narrowed so significantly, even in games like last night where they ultimately overpower an inferior squad and come out with 2 points.
Yeah. And the interesting thing is, even in the games that they've lost or, you know, struggled offensively against some of the really good teams, they're in those games. And so when people were texting in earlier today, like, oh, they're going to be a first round exit. You know, look what the Oilers did to the Ducks and then what the Canucks did.
That's how you win the Stanley Cup, actually.
Yes, it's beating the Ducks 6-1 on Saturday.
Aggregate goal totals against the Ducks. That's the key.
But the thing is, it's like, it's not I don't think the Canucks are going to be an easy out by any stretch. It's not as if they've looked like a walkover against any of these teams. It's just been the struggle to find that separating factor themselves. And look, when you're an elite defensive team, like the Canucks have been for half the season at this point, pretty much, you're going to be in a lot of games. You're going to give yourself a chance to win. It's just to really go far in the playoffs. I think you need to have that other edge as well. And I think that's what Rick Tocchet is still trying to find in his forward group. We will wrap it up there. We are back for another one tomorrow on a Canucks game day. They will take on the Vegas Golden Knights in Vegas. Keep it right here before then on Canucks. Oh, wait. What's the name of our station?
Sportsnet 650.
Yeah, there we go. It is Canucks Talk on
Holland Pavement, baby.
Sportsnet 650.